Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, March 4th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho House Committee approves resolution threatening lawsuit against State Board of Education that could kill UI's University of Phoenix purchase deal. Idaho House passes bill banning needle exchanges. Trump wins low turnout Idaho Republican presidential caucus, and leadership crisis in Grant County, Washington splits Republican Party there. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho House today passed a bill repealing the state's syringe exchange, a major component in the state's harm reduction programs. Republican Representative John Vander Woody of Nampa sponsored the bill in a hasty reaction to the February 13th Boise and Caldwell police raids on harm reduction offices, in which police say they took illegal drug paraphernalia and electronic devices. The search warrant for the Idaho Harm Reduction Program offices did not list syringes, which would have been legal. Police say these searches were for items related to the use of methamphetamine, opioids, and crack cocaine. The Idaho Press reports no arrests have been made and no charges have been filed in relation to the raids. The Centers for Disease Control says syringe exchange programs can reduce the spread of HIV and hepatitis C among the injectable drug-using population and the wider community. Vander Woody told the House, "Two of the exchange places here in the valley were raided by the police and stuff was confiscated. I don't think this fits very well in this area. The program, I don't believe, has functioned by the guidelines that was originally set out for reporting, for responding." Democrat Nate Roberts of Pocatello, who voted against repealing the law, pointed to a New England Journal of Medicine report on an Indiana HIV outbreak that ended up protecting communities through a needle exchange program. Roberts said at the time of the outbreak, it was illegal to have safe syringe programs. He said they began to exchange the safe syringe program because of that. They were able to flatten and eventually eliminate that outbreak. Roberts also said Idaho's needle exchange program prevented 99 HIV infections and 280 hepatitis C infections. He said if those infections had led to disease outbreaks in Ada County, it would have cost the state billions of dollars to treat the patients over their lifetimes. Democrat Elena Rubel of Boise said those at the harm reduction programs in Boise and Caldwell are innocent until proven guilty. Rubel said regardless, there are many other providers throughout the state where there haven't been a whiff of allegations of anything untoward happening with those providers. If there's one restaurant and that's found to have a food safety violation, you wouldn't shut down every restaurant in town. Representative Vander Woody's bill passed 53-13 in the House and now heads to the Senate side. The Idaho House Health and Welfare Committee passed a bill today from Republican Representative Megan Blanksma of Hammett that would expand postpartum Medicaid coverage to 12 months. Idaho Voices for Children Senior Policy Associate Hillary Hagen told the committee there are often gaps in coverage, even if many pregnant women are covered by Medicaid after the current 60-day postpartum coverage lapses. Hagen said new mothers are often able to renew their coverage, but, quote, they often experience gaps in coverage, meaning they are at risk of untreated health complications and delaying treatment that can be very critical. If House Bill 633 becomes law, Idaho will be the 47th state in the nation to expand postpartum Medicaid coverage to a full year. The Idaho Capital Sun reports more than 50% of the pregnancy-related deaths in Idaho in 2021 happened between 43 days and a year after birth. Idaho lawmakers disbanded the state's federally funded maternal death review panel just after the state imposed one of the strictest anti-abortion laws in the nation, meaning the state could no longer track pregnancy-related deaths. In its last report, the Maternal Death Review Panel found most of the maternal deaths in Idaho were preventable. Another bill from Representative Blanksma earlier in the session reestablishing the panel directly under the Health and Welfare Department passed the House last month and is now awaiting action on the Senate floor. The influential far right appears to be split on the bill. Idaho Chooses Life Executive Director David Ripley said Blanksma's new bill is important to the legislature's commitment to protecting life. Ripley said, "We must be there to make a commitment to mothers when we ask them to make a commitment to their babies." Idaho Freedom Foundation Legislative Affairs Director Fred Birnbaum testified against the bill because it might raise the federal debt. The bill would direct the Idaho Health and Welfare Department to allow women to apply for expanded postpartum coverage starting July 1st. The bill passed the House Health and Welfare Committee 9-2 with right-wing Idaho Freedom Caucus members Mike Kingsley of Lewiston and Jason Gallagher of Weezer, both Republicans, voting against. The bill next goes to the House floor. And you're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by SkyGlow Solar, offering solar power systems installations on the Palouse and surrounding region. Information at skyglowsolar.com or contact Brian Ogle at 208-310-4545.
Don't touch that dial. You got it right.
We're up in the morning when I first get the light, and we do it all day. Then we're up all night so you can listen to the radio.
You got it right.
You listen to the radio. You got it right.
Listen, listen, anytime you listen, everybody's on a mission, and there ain't nothing missing when you listen to the radio.
You listen to the radio.
You got it right.
Community radio.
Listen, you give a little listen to the radio.
Radio Free Moscow.
Fight Back Radio.
It's 90.3 on your radio dial.
Fight back.
Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for your support. So keep on listening and listening and listening.
Fight back.
See y'all around. We're still here.
Radio.
Fight
back. Fight
back.
Fight
back.
Fight
back.
Fight back.
Fight back.
Fight back.
In news from the University of Idaho's planned purchase of the University of Phoenix, the Idaho House State Affairs Committee Friday passed a concurrent resolution encouraging the State Board of Education to reconsider its decision to approve a financing plan for the University of Idaho to purchase the 85,000-student online University of Phoenix and threatening a lawsuit if the Ed Board did not reverse course. During the first 2 hours of discussion Thursday, Ed Board member Kurt Liebeck told the committee passing the resolution with its lawsuit threat would put the purchase at grave risk because the legal threat would make it difficult for the University of Idaho's spinoff nonprofit, 4-3 Education, to purchase bonds needed to finance the $685 million deal. The committee spent another hour discussing the resolution Friday. At Friday's session, Attorney General Raul Labrador, who had unsuccessfully sued the State Board of Education for what he said were open meetings law violations for executive sessions last year with the University of Idaho to discuss the University of Phoenix purchases, told committee members the lack of transparency plagued the purchase plan. Former State Board of Education member Rod Lewis, who said he has been heavily involved in mergers and acquisitions in the past and has a personal financial stake in the University of Idaho as a bondholder, told the committee he's concerned the University of Idaho's risk protections from the University of Phoenix purchase, up to $10 million per year, could be inaccurate.
From the time the University of Idaho announced its proposed acquisition of the University of Phoenix, my primary concerns have been risk and process. From a policy standpoint, the University of Idaho's proposed purchase of the University of Phoenix would constitute the largest change in the history of Idaho's higher education system. and it involves one of the biggest debt offerings by an Idaho-owned entity in the history of the state. The proposed purchase constitutes, in effect, the purchase of an entire university, larger than the student population of all of Idaho's universities combined, with revenues almost twice as large as those of the University of Idaho. This matter is one of the most important matters in the history of Idaho's university system. I strongly believe the state board should facilitate additional public debate and that the legislature should engage in a comprehensive review of this transaction with the full benefit of its own objective legal and financial experts.
That's former State Board of Education member Rod Lewis. Lewis said if 4-3 Education, the new nonprofit the University of Idaho is creating to run the University of Phoenix, fails to make payments on Phoenix's debts, the default could have catastrophic effects on the University of Idaho and the state. He said there should be a lengthy objective review. University of Idaho graduate Bill Kearns of Boise said the state needs to improve its very low high school graduate college go-on rates, and the University of Phoenix purchase could help with that.
Let's not go down that path of litigation. I don't support this resolution. What I do support is your sitting down with the University of Idaho experts, talking about this transaction further, understanding what they've done. Learn what they've done. Excuse me. I trust Scott Green, and I hope you do too. We've all seen what him and his team has done at the University of Idaho. Took a university that was losing millions of dollars, declining enrollment, have turned it around. It's profitable today. Enrollment's growing today. And he did it through COVID and a tragic capital crime on our beautiful campus. I implore you, stop the Attorney General's litigation. Do not pass this bill. Form the right committee with the right people from this group, from the legislative leadership, from JFAC, whatever it is. Sit down with Scott and his team, understand the transaction, understand the merits, and think about the need for an educated workforce in Idaho and how this can help deliver new pathways for education to the residents of Idaho. Don't squash this deal because you don't like the way it went down. Get educated. You can do it. You have the time. You have the ability. You have the intelligence. Do it. And they told you many times yesterday, they're ready, willing, and able to do that. So please understand what's going on. Understand the necessary timelines. And don't kill this deal just because you don't think it's constitutional. Understand if it is or it isn't. Get involved. Get your sleeves up. This has been going on since last May. They announced it last May. 10 months. Let's dig in. Let's go. Let's see if we can make this happen and benefit the employers of Idaho who desperately need an educated workforce to grow their businesses, prosper the residents.
Can you wrap it up here?
Yes. Okay. And by prospering residents and growing jobs, it'll fill your tax coffers so you guys can do the kind of things you think need to be done.
That was Bill Kearns testifying to the Idaho House State Affairs Committee Friday. Attorney General Raul Labrador spoke about the lack of transparency in the deal.
The open meeting law codifies a simple but fundamental Idaho value. The public's business ought to be done in public. And I think a lot of the questions that you have had over the last few days could have been answered if there would have been an open and honest meeting about this transaction. Because there's so many questions, and I think you're going to have 2 more hours today, and I don't think that's sufficient to answer all the questions that I think the people of Idaho have about this transaction. I do not take a position on the transaction because I don't know enough about the transaction. I don't think the public knows enough about the transaction. And I actually heard really good presentations yesterday about why it might be a great deal for the people of Idaho. But the reason we have open meetings in the state of Idaho is because you cannot just have one side presenting why it is something good for the people of Idaho. As you know, in your public meetings here in the legislature, you usually hear two sides on every bill. You hear why something is good. You have experts on one side, and then you have experts on the other side. And they can actually assess and determine, you know, the frailties, the difficulties, the reality about every single transaction. I think that's why open meetings are important. The University of Idaho and the State Board of Education and Holly Troxell apparently believe that because the Board of Regents has a constitutional existence, which I do not disagree with, then it has broad powers and discretion to do nearly anything it wants. It provides no limiting principle. Under its theory, nothing would prevent the board from acquiring a for-profit company and claiming externship opportunities, for example, to provide a sufficient nexus to its educational mission. Now, I'm going to be really honest with you guys. The Office of Attorney General is also a pre-constitutional office. So I hope they're right, that I can do anything I want, that I don't have to come to you anymore and ask for permission for things to do in my office, because I also exist as a pre-constitutional member of the state. But we all know that that's not true. We all know that that can't happen, that I still have to come to you for certain things. There are some things that, just like the board and like the university, I can do that are different than, and I'll just give you one example. I can have my own Division of Human Resources. I don't have to go through the General Division of Human Resources because I am a constitutional entity. The Office of Attorney General is a constitutional entity. It doesn't mean that I don't have to follow the laws and I don't have to become subject to the legislative authority that you have. Through the Idaho Constitution, the people of Idaho created the Board of Regents and gave it a limited and specific purpose to supervise operations of the University of Idaho. But the Holly Troxell memo does not address the central constitutional question. I think you guys asked this question many, many times yesterday, and it was not answered. The central constitutional question of where the Board of Regents is given the power to acquire and operate a private educational institution that is apparently disconnected from the University of Idaho. I thought it was really interesting, and I was very impressed. I have told her this already. I was very impressed with Legislative Council's presentation. It was actually one of the best presentations I have seen in any committee. So I think she's more than adequate in presenting the constitutional and legal issues that are raised by this transaction. The board's attempt to operate a nonprofit entity may allow it, and this one question, I think you saw this in the previous presentation that was just given to you, may allow it to circumvent many public protections and matters of state policy.
And that was Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador. Republican Representative Vito Barbieri of Dalton Gardens asked if the legislature had any recourse besides filing a lawsuit, and Labrador replied, "I don't want to answer that question right now, but that is a very important question." Democrat Todd Achilles of Boise made an unsuccessful motion to take the reference to a lawsuit out of the resolution. All committee members except Achilles voted against the motion. Discussing the motion, Republican Representative Heather Scott of Blanchard said, "I do think we may need to pursue something legally here." University of Idaho officials, including President C. Scott Green, who testified Thursday, implied colleges and universities around the nation are facing an existential crisis. Green said many will close because they are facing an enrollment cliff in which there are a smaller number of 18 to 22-year-olds going to college after high school graduation. Green said the purchase of the University of Phoenix could inject millions of dollars per year into the University of Idaho's coffers and allow it to expand its online offerings into rural areas. Former President Donald Trump had 84% of the vote in Idaho's Republican Party presidential caucus Saturday, in which voters had to meet at a local caucus site during a two-hour period at midday Saturday in order to participate. Nikki Haley had 13.2% of the vote. The need to show up at a certain time and go through a process that could take up to 2 hours caused turnout to be light. With 100% of precincts reporting as of late Saturday, Trump had 33,603 votes. Idaho has 580,000 voters affiliating with the Republican Party. Nikki Haley had a total of 5,221 votes. Party data shows 39,584 people cast ballots in Saturday's caucus. That means 93% of the registered Republicans in the state did not vote Saturday. Under the state Republican Party system, any candidate who gets more than 50% of the votes in the caucus gets all 32 Idaho delegates to the Republican National Convention. If no candidate had received more than 50% of the vote, as Trump did, then the party would have distributed delegates proportionately, with any candidate receiving less than 15% getting zero delegates. With the legislature eliminating presidential primaries in Idaho last year, the parties are organizing and paying for their own caucuses. Idaho Democrats will hold their presidential caucus Thursday, May 23rd, 2 days after the statewide primary for all other partisan elected offices in the state. The Idaho Republican Party, led by 2020 election denier Dorothy Moon, closed the caucuses to reporters statewide, although some reporters who were registered as Republicans were able to report on the process where they voted or from outside caucus sites. During last year's legislative session, party chair Moon opposed a bill that would have moved the Republican presidential primary to May, the same day as the primaries for all other partisan offices. The Idaho Press reports at Foothills Christian Church in Boise, the caucus process took as little as 10 to 15 minutes. The paper reported there were no lines at 12:30 p.m., a half hour after the caucus began. Voters showed a photo ID, signed a polling book, and took their ballot into a room to vote. The polling room had two projectors of videos, one from Donald Trump and one from Nikki Haley. Party workers had left flyers on chairs urging voters to oppose the Reclaim Idaho initiative to create top four open primaries in the state, a proposal supporters say will bring a semblance of balance back to Idaho politics and end the far right's grip on the state Republican Party. Idaho Federation of Republican Women President Tracy Wasden said a polling site in Nampa at Lone Star Middle School had parking and accessibility problems, and she waited in line for more than 45 minutes to vote. Wasden said people with mobility issues struggled to walk around the building to the entrance. She said, "When I got there, both parking lots on both sides were full, and people were already leaving because they couldn't stand in line any longer." She also said voters who entered the building at the start of voting at noon were not able to vote until 1:30. She said Republican workers did not provide ballots until voters endured an opening, which included a prayer, the Pledge of Allegiance, the national anthem, and candidate videos. Wasden called it, quote, "an absolutely absurd, ridiculous situation." The Republican caucus in Idaho had no system for absentee voting. Idaho press writer Natalie Hostin, who is affiliated with the Republican Party, said she did not get to vote. Hostin wrote in an email, "I tried to participate in the Republican caucus today at Skyview High School in Nampa. The flyer I got in the mail about it said doors open at noon. There was no ending time listed. When I drove by the school around 12:30, it was packed, so I thought I'd go home, drop off my daughter, and return. When I got back to the school around 2:25, they were already wrapping up. A group of about 30 to 40 of us were outside, banging on the door, asking them to let us in. People were very upset. One person said their friend was at Lakeview, and they were open till 3. One man hollered, 'Welcome to China.' There were several who were clearly confused and angry about what was happening." In order to vote in Saturday's caucus, voters had to be registered as affiliating with the Republican Party by December 31st. Those who want to vote in the May 21st Idaho Republican primaries for other races must register as affiliated with the Republican Party by Friday of this week. Friday is also the last day for candidates in Idaho to file to be on the ballot this year. Registered voters can change their party affiliation on the Idaho Secretary of State's website. Democrats will allow members of any party to vote in their primaries May 21st, as long as they do not vote in any other party's primary that day. On primary day, voters will be given the choice of a Republican, Democratic, or nonpartisan ballot. The nonpartisan ballot will not have any primary candidates, but may have candidates for certain nonpartisan races.
The Factory Farm Group says large corporate agriculture producers are getting federal environmental safeguard funds that were intended for smaller operations. The Inflation Reduction Act has provided $3 billion for conservation programs designed to shore up farm-related environmental safeguards. Many focused on concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. Farm Action President Angela Huffman says a recent shift in Biden administration policy has allowed money intended for small or medium-sized farmers, who've often been underserved by USDA policies, to wind up in the hands of corporate CAFOs.
They're already raking in a lot of taxpayer-funded subsidies, so we're really urging USDA to reconsider this recent decision.
The latest data show Montana is home to more than 120 CAFOs, just a fraction of the national total of more than 120,000, but significant in a state that has decreased environmental regulations. Large-scale ag operators say they also are looking for ways to be more environmentally friendly while meeting growing consumer demand for safe, high-quality foods. Huffman says large ag operations have gotten money to process liquid waste from manure lagoons and to install anaerobic digesters, which remove methane from manure that corporations then sell as an energy source. Huffman says neither was intended to be paid for by the Inflation Reduction Act. She adds a recent letter from Congress has asked the agency to reverse course.
Congress authorized USDA to spend these funds to help smaller and mid-sized producers implement conservation practices, and that's what the USDA should be doing.
That letter went to Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, former governor of Iowa, the nation's largest hog producer and home to almost 4,000 CAFOs. That's the most in the nation, by a factor of more than 3.5. This is Mark Moran for Big Sky Connection.
A Wyoming nonprofit is helping single mothers climb out of poverty by connecting them with the training and support they need to step into and succeed at good-paying jobs. As Climb Wyoming CEO Katie Hogarty explains, her team taps a wide range of community partners, including school counselors, soup kitchens, and clinics, to identify women in need. Climb then works with moms to find childcare they can trust, and the entire free training program can be completed in as little as 12 weeks.
We have a 98% graduation rate, and 86% of our graduates have doubled or even tripled their wages 2 years post-program. So we have really phenomenal outcomes for such a short training program.
One in four Wyoming kids live in single-parent families, according to Wyoming Community Foundation data, and those kids are more likely to live in poverty compared to their peers in married-parent families. Since 1986, Climb Wyoming has served more than 12,000 moms and 25,000 children. Hogarty says access to jobs is key to positive outcomes, so each of their six sites across the state build relationships with local employers to make sure women are getting the most relevant training. Climb pays for each new employee's first 6 weeks' wages and provides ongoing support to help participants settle into new routines.
We have a commitment to providing training for higher paying jobs so that women really can move their families out of poverty. In some of our communities, we really focus on medical careers. In some of our communities, we focus on construction trades. It really just depends on each community.
The group's specialty is helping people whose brains have been stressed by the trauma of nonstop fight, flight, or freeze mode that comes with extreme poverty recover and strengthen their executive functions critical for successful employment. Hogarty says when you move a mom out of poverty, the impacts on the second generation are substantial.
The children of our graduates are having more success in school. They're healthier. They're more stable. And to me, that's why we all do this work, is because we believe in a strong Wyoming and strong families.
Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. This is Eric Galatis for the Wyoming News Service.
The Republican Party in eastern Washington's Grant County has split into two factions over a leadership crisis. The two factions of the county Republican Party have elected their own chairs and state committee representatives. The Spokesman Review reports David Hunt, who has been chair, currently has an open criminal case against him. The Washington State Republican Party says it recognizes the officers party members elected last year, and they are Hunt, and state committee persons Candace Erickson and Rich Heilberg. Erickson and Heilberg are in a faction opposing Hunt, and they control the county's Facebook page. Hunt controls the county Republican website. Erickson and Heilberg, along with a group of precinct committee officers, have appointed Andrew Copin as chair. After the party elected Hunt chair in January 2023, Hunt addressed restraining orders against him that came from alleged violent threats Hunt made against his wife in 2020. Hunt said he was a changed man and had resolved issues with his wife. Republican committee persons accepted the explanation at face value at the time, but since then it became clear that Hunt had a pending felony charge against him, one committee person said. At that point, I could not be part of an organization that had a potential felon running it. The Moscow City Council will vote on an ordinance tonight to allow self-storage facilities in more residential and commercial zoning districts. Current zoning law only allows self-storage in certain commercial zoning districts. The new ordinance would allow storage units in the R3 and R4 residential districts. The City Planning and Zoning Commission prepared the ordinance because the city is continuing to allow a wider variety of housing, some of which is built on smaller lots with limited space for storage. The City Council will also vote on a resolution supporting the Latah County Library District. The agenda item says, in response to recently proposed legislation, the cities of Blackfoot, Shelley, Firth, and Aberdeen and the Bingham County Commissioners recently passed a resolution expressing their confidence in the ability of the Board of Trustees and Library Directors of the public libraries in Bingham County to exercise their statutory duties to establish policies and practices to provide appropriate access to print and electronic materials to their patrons. Moscow City Council leadership requested staff to prepare a similar resolution expressing the Moscow City Council's support of the Latah County Library District. Staff has prepared a draft resolution for the council's consideration. The resolution is in response to bills in the Idaho legislature this year creating a citizen cause of action to sue public and school district libraries if they distribute material deemed harmful to minors to someone's offspring. The City Council will also hear the annual report on the 1912 Center from Heart of the Arts Incorporated Executive Director Jenny Kostroff. The nonprofit Heart of the Arts Incorporated has been managing the city-owned 1912 Center on East 3rd Street since 2007. Well, that's the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, there is a 30% chance of snow tonight. Slight chance of snow before 7 p.m., then a chance of snow after 2 a.m., patchy fog after 3 a.m., otherwise partly cloudy, low 23. Total nighttime snow accumulation less than half an inch possible. 30% chance of snow mainly before 7 a.m. tomorrow, patchy fog before 8 a.m., otherwise partly sunny, high 38, little or no snow accumulation expected. And mostly clear Tuesday night and Wednesday, low 22 and high 38. There's a special weather statement from the National Weather Service for the Washington and Idaho Palouse, the Central Panhandle Mountains, the Spokane area, the northeastern Washington Mountains, and the Okanagan Highlands. Through Monday evening, isolated scattered snow showers, some heavy at times, will impact eastern Washington and northern Idaho. Spotters and cameras have reported rapidly changing road conditions as snow showers move through. With the loss of afternoon heating, temperatures will be falling near or below freezing, resulting in the potential for icy conditions on untreated surfaces. Please use caution if traveling this evening and overnight, and be prepared for winter driving conditions. Current temperature is 34. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. There you can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. And also on the website, you can stream KRFP and listen to the two-week archive of all shows broadcast on KRFP. Click on the heart on the website. And once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Flashpoints is up next, and then Zach Dunoir is on the air. Play music for you, 7:30 to 9. Chia Pet's on the air live, 9 to 11 p.m. tonight. And syndicated world music with the Motherland Influence on the air, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. So stay tuned. KRFP, Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by C.F. Morrison Guitars at 130 North Grand Avenue in Pullman, providing lessons, repairs, and handmade acoustic and classical guitars. Open Wednesday and Saturday afternoons. Details at cfmorrisonguitars.com. KRFP thanks its donors and sponsors.